chance to have the Charlie's opinion, perhaps. Our presentation today is about internet privacy and security. And Professor Giraldi is a computer science professor here at WPI, professor of practice, and maybe he can explain to us what that means.
Okay. Well, thank you. First, I should probably say I'm recording this, so everyone please speak clearly into the microphone. And I'm required by law to email this to John Ashcroft in the morning. Just kidding. Just kidding. I have to send it to a secretary. What happened is one of my students came by this morning and said, "Oh, I have to miss your talk today. Are you going to be recording it?" I said, "Well, okay, Dave. Well, so you have Dave to blame for this. So if you're going to say anything incriminating, let me know, and I can always stop the recording, at least temporarily, I think." Yeah, probably. Can you just the front part? Okay. Is that readable to everybody? Okay. Well, I'd like to thank Pugwash for inviting me here today, especially Natasha, who's in my class, my social ones class. Let's see. I should probably say I'm not an expert on internet privacy and security, and I do not play one on television either. But I do know something about it, having been in the computer business for a long time, because I started programming back in 1967. And for people who are wondering why I am professor of practice, it does not mean that I'm still working on this stuff. Although I am. In fact, every day I learn something new, it seems, which I hope is something you'll all be able to do in the rest of your lives. What that means is, instead of coming up through the academic ranks, I worked in industry for many years. I worked for several large companies, and I also ran my own consulting business for a while, and taught part-time in a variety of colleges and universities. And then about 4 years ago, I heard about this opening at WPI, and they wound up hiring me very nicely. And so I've been here ever since, and having a great time. I will tell you, it's more work for less money than working for Lucent. And I don't get stock options, but on the other hand, my Lucent stock options weren't working at worth anything anyway. So I actually got out while the getting was good on Lucent, got a little bit of money by getting out. Okay, so anyway, that's me. So today, I want to talk about internet privacy and security. So the first question is, why are you here tonight instead of having a click? Right? So for those people who don't know what Click is, they're meeting on the third floor at 6 o'clock. That's what campus life involving consensual kink. About once a day in the social links course, I have to say, I'm not making this up. Actually, there's an organization like that on campus. And so I thank you for coming to see me instead of them. Of course, I guess they meet every week, so you have another chance next time. Actually, does Pugwash meet every week at the same time?
No.
Okay. Well, maybe there's a last longer. Anyway. So as loyal Pugwash members, you should know, here are some of the ideals of Pugwash. I sold these right from the website, but with proper attribution, as I hope you all have learned in your courses here. Let's try to bring scientific insight and reason to bear on threats to human security arising from science and technology in general. And they do these things, they pursue these through debate, discussion, and collaborative analysis in an atmosphere of candor and mutual respect. Probably enough, I think Click's mission statement is just about the same thing. So anyway, a belated congratulations to you folks for winning the 1995 Nobel Peace Prize. So I'm going to try and foster these things today. So let's see what happens. So first, I graduated from Cornell University, that class of 1973. I remember I hung around campus for a couple years after that. But I remember about a year after I moved back home, I happened to come back to campus, and I was meeting with some of the people from who were now members of my fraternity, because they didn't know when I was there. And they were asking things like, why did you have all those protests and occupying buildings and things like that? I said, well, a little hard to explain. You had to be there. But then as I was reminiscing about that, I said, you really should be glad that you're in college. So I'll say the same thing to you folks, because it's true. Because basically you can discuss any topic here while you're on campus. You can express any opinion and nobody will try to kill you. You don't have that freedom in the real world. I don't want to say that I used to be an idealist that got it beaten out of me, but I think I still am an idealist. But I also realize we do live in a real world, and a lot of that means having to make trade-offs. We'll talk about some of those as we go on today. So I'll be asking you some questions along here, but you don't have to take notes. But you know, feel free to break in and anything, and hope we can have some discussion along the way. How does that work in social life? Sometimes we get people to talk. I shouldn't just pugwash people into my class because you all have ideas, right? You have opinions. Okay, we'll find out. So this is a huge topic. You know, but because of the social implication strategy, I spent them like 4 hours on privacy and almost nothing on security. And so I'm just going to give you kind of an overview, more of a way of stimulating some thought for you. That is to raise some of the issues and get you thinking about them. These things are going to change over the years. Some of these issues are things that we've had for years, for thousands of years probably. And others are brand new. They're changing all the time. Okay. When you have trade-offs, I mean, hey, you're engineering students, right? You learn about trade-offs. What you have to do is identify the trade-offs. You say, if I make this choice, what will happen? What good thing will happen? What bad thing will happen? What do I get? What do I have to give up? It will be usually impossible to maximize every good thing that you would like to have. And this is part of being alive. This is part of being in this world, knowing that you can't always have what you want. You can't always get what you want. Right? If you try sometime, you just might find you get what you need. What I want to warn you about is don't go for the quick fix. Don't go for the easy answer. Don't believe somebody who says, if you do what I suggest, there will be no negative consequences. That usually means that either they don't know what they are or they don't care about them. Right? It's often because the negative consequences are going to happen to somebody else. Like maybe you, right? But maybe you know somebody else, some other country, some other ethnic group or social economic group or something. Or maybe just anybody except the person who is making that suggestion. You'll meet a lot of people like that. I don't want to just make you all discouraged about your life. You all know Dilbert, right? Okay. Years and years and years ago, one of the first Dilberts, after Ashok, the intern, was first introduced, at one point they play a practical joke on him. They tell him, you know, the warp reactor is about to explode. You have to crawl through the Jeffries tube and save the company. So they're stuffing him into the air conditioning duct. They say, here's where he realizes that life is not like Star Trek. Life is not like college. Even if you're lucky enough to come back and stay here and work at the college, real life is not really like college. But that's okay. That's okay. You know, you can sort of ease into it gradually. Right. So here's the first question I have for you. Whom do you fear most? And they'll say George W. Bush. Do you fear the government? Do you fear big business? Do you fear criminals who have somehow acquired your private data? Or do you just fear criminals in general? And I'll just include, you know, terrorists and fanatics of all kinds. And the reason I pose this is when you look at the trade-offs that are made, a lot of them will depend on what the answer is to this question. Because you're going to assign priorities to the various things, good and bad, that can happen as you deal with privacy issues. So, okay, but luckily, we're not video recording this, so it won't go on to the tape. So how many people think government is who you should fear the most?
I feel that. Okay. I have a question before that.
Sure.
Is this fearing most in terms of internet security and privacy, or is it fearing the most in general? Mm.
Good question. I don't know. you have different answers now?
I do.
What? Which one do you fear for general?
I would say for
for criminals in general? Okay. How about for privacy?
And I'll say one.
Okay. Government. All right.
Gee.
Well, let's say overall. So, how do you think the biggest threat is? I'm thinking in terms of by violating your privacy, but, still, there's something bad is going to happen to you, right? Maybe firstly related to privacy, maybe not, right? But, all right, who can you think is government number one? Okay. Big business?
Number one.
Okay. Criminals who have stolen your data? Right? And then other criminals maybe don't get it. Right? That's an almost even split. I mean, considering the size of the statistical sample and the fact that we had to quantize it, everybody's only allowed to have one, so you can't get like 2.5 votes and anything like that. Right. Keep that in mind. Got a couple of quotes there. Number one, power tends to corrupt. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. I should have put the flag number so I could key that to the audio tape. Well, anyway, it's the one that says power corrupts. Power tends to corrupt. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Anybody know who said that? He's the same teacher in football school. It was Lord Acton, who is not the first person in the hometown of Acton, who was named Acton. He was a British guy about end of the 19th century. Power tends to corrupt, absolute power corrupts absolutely. I think we see plenty of examples of that in our world, whether it be in our own government, right, or in organizations we've been involved in, or companies, or other world leaders, or anything like that. There's this old legend of the wise philosopher king, right, the person who can be trusted to have absolute power and not abuse it, and that does not happen very often in the real world. People tend to get an inflated opinion of their own self-worth and their own priorities, and whether it be, say, Saddam Hussein, who goes and builds palaces with elaborate swimming pools and video arcades and so on, right, while his people are starving, or whether it be someone who owns a series of leaders in North Korea who spend the people's money building weapons while their citizens are starving, right? Or any number of other people who, even if their citizens are well fed, just enjoy like oppressing them just because they can. It's easy to make light of this, but it really does happen, right? And you have to be always vigilant. I think that one of the main strengths of democracy is that you have a feedback mechanism. If the person who is in charge really does abuse the power, you have a way of getting rid of that person short of just going and killing them. Right? You can get rid of them, you have checks and balances between branch of the government, that sort of thing. And I think this feedback is very important. Now, of course, that's kind of a downside. They always say, look at so-and-so. He's not really a true statesman. He's just doing what the public wants. Well, it's part of his job in a democracy. But on the other hand, you kind of expect your leader to have some good ideas, even if the general public doesn't have them, and maybe he can convince them. So there's always a balancing act there. There's always a balancing act there, too. Okay. Got another quote for you. The rights of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. What's that?
Fourth Amendment.
Okay. The Bill of Rights, in particular the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Now, why did they add this to the Constitution? Question for the interested student. It's not a trick question, but
there was a problem before when they were selling the British law, British soldiers were stopping
colonies and charging that property. Exactly. You know, the famous of the U.S. Constitution knew firsthand that these were important rights that people wanted to have that were regularly abused under the previous administration. And they said, we're not going to let that happen here. And we're not just going to pass a law against it or have a rule against it. We're going to put it in the damn Constitution so that nobody forgets it. And if somebody tries to, we have mechanisms such as judicial review, although of course that was kind of in its infancy back then, but we have mechanisms that will say, no, Mr. President, you can't do that. It violates the Constitution. Or Congress, you can't do that because it violates the Constitution. Yes?
What about the Patriot Act?
Yeah, well, there's that. Yes. This is indeed very problematic. Yes?
Also, what about the FISA courts?
What?
FISA, I think, not FISA.
Okay, yeah, basically secret courts that can do things related to security. Yeah, well, it's a problem. I'm not going to get there and say I think the USA Patriot Act is perfect. I think there's a lot of things which may very well get thrown out, but some things are being upheld. Well, that's why it's there. It doesn't always work, but that's why it's there. Let me also point out that even without this, who passed the USA Patriot Act? It's the people that you voted for. Well, maybe you're all a little bit young to have been in the last cycle, but who could maybe vote to repeal it next time? It's the people you'll get to vote for in 2004. If you don't like it, let them know. Say, I'm not going to vote for you unless you promise to get rid of it, or at least get rid of the parts that I think are improper. Or vote for the person who says that he will get rid of it, or she will get rid of it. Of course, then there's always the problem that if you do that, maybe you'll have somebody where you agree on that one issue and you disagree with all the other things. Well, anyway, well, that's all part of being a democracy. Okay, got one more thing. Hope you all know that's from 1984, that's George Orwell. All right, so, what sort of information is there on you? And I'm not going to read all of these, but think about some of these. Let me think. And I just talk about information in general. It could be a variety of places. What you might consider basically geographic information. Your race, your ethnicity, whether you have a disability. Are you blind? Do you have a hearing problem? Do you have epilepsy? Do you have ADD? I won't take a poll on any of these. That's a piece of information, maybe important information, maybe important for some people to know that. You might want certain other people not to know that. Right? Your financial information. Who you hang out with. Do you want people to know that you're a card-carrying member of Student Pugwash? Maybe today you do. Maybe some other time you might not. Do you want people to know what you've bought, what you've rented, what you read? For example, of course, people were in social media for part of this man before. But, suppose they come, 20 years from now, you're being nominated for the Supreme Court, and they say, well, Mr. Potential Supreme Court Justice, well, Ms. Potential Supreme Court Justice, according to our records here, 20 years ago, you read to the dirty movie from Blockbuster. What do you have to say for yourself? You go, I was doing research. I was young. I was drunk at the time. And you get away with that. Or maybe you'll say, who cares? That doesn't disqualify me from being good. Obviously, they never seem to answer with that last question. And you never say, what are you doing tying into that for me? But the point is, if you think that doesn't happen, it has. Things like what books people have bought, what books they've gotten from the library, what videotapes they've rented, have in fact come up during confirmation hearings over the last 10 years or so. Your medical information. What websites have you been to? What's in your email? What news groups do you read? Not just what news groups have you posted to, but which ones do you even read? What were your grades here at WPI? Did you actually get that BS or that MS degree or whatever? Or are you just making that up? Where did you work? And if you're not there anymore, why did you leave? Did you leave voluntarily or did they kick you out? Right? Have you ever been arrested? Right? What's your password? All this sort of stuff which certain people probably have a legitimate reason for knowing. You kind of hope that WPI would actually remember that they gave you the degree, that they didn't even check. Right? So you can't make that secret. On the other hand, do you want everybody else to know that? Or do you want certain people, when you give them permission, to know those things? These are all sort of basic privacy issues, independently of whether it's in a computer or not. Okay. So where is it? Well, it's in all sorts of records, in all sorts of paper and electronic records. And who holds them? Well, companies, about their employees, about their customers, perhaps even about the customers of their competitors, and so on. Right? All the various branches and levels of government have information about you. The federal government knows your taxes, it has census information about you. State government knows also things like taxes, voter registration, right? Local government. What sort of information local government have about you? What would your parents say?
Local government, I think,
keeps
track of all the property
you own. Okay, property. How much is your house? Is your house worth? Right? How much did you pay in property tax last year? Did you pay it, or are you delinquent in that? No. Is that public knowledge, or is that confidential? How much you paid for your house?
Public.
It's public. You're on the courthouse or wherever they have it. You ask them, they'll tell you. It's considered public information. Heck, a lot of times it's published in the newspaper. But it happens. It's considered a matter of public record that the property has changed hands. There's a legitimate public interest for people to know that this has happened. And you might agree with it, you might not, but that's the rationale for it. And so it's revealed. Right? Of course, the school has information. Right? Other organizations, are you in a secret Pugwash database? Does Pugwash have an enemies list or something? People they don't like. Or conversely, does the NRA have you all targeted or something? I hope not. Well, there are better things to do than that. Maybe target is the wrong word for the NRA. But the point is, there's all sorts of information. Right. So where does it come from? Okay, well, you got public records, things like, I'll give you another example. Before I forget, you may notice this great background I have on all these slides. I picked this one because it reminded me of the coast of Nova Scotia. My wife and I were up in Halifax a couple of years ago. It's a beautiful, beautiful countryside, right? And then we went down to Lunenburg. Had a great couple of days there. And WPI even paid for part of it. I paid to send her. She was there on a business trip, and I nagged once. I had to pay for my trip. Anyway, let's go. Okay, well, there's public records. You sell property or something, and the government records it. Right? There's internal things. Companies keep track of stuff. There's also things where you fill out a form. You're applying for credit, you're applying for school, you're joining, you're with Amazon.com, you're joining the Science Fiction Book Club, you're joining Pugwash, right? And then there's reports from other people, especially with government agencies, there might be things that the FBI has or the military has, you'll have reports, or that even your company will have, you'll have a performance report written by your supervisor, say, who maybe gave an accurate report, maybe didn't. Maybe there's in police records, there's information from informants or rumors about people or so on. Maybe it's accurate. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's about somebody else entirely. Somebody with a similar name or something. So here's the sort of question that you have to ask just about that information, let alone, what people are necessarily doing with them. It's not the information, right? It isn't accurate. You know, how many, I keep getting, actually study that one. I'll get a subscription to a magazine, right? And then, I used to, a lot of times I'd take those cards in the back and circle the numbers, you know, for more information, right? So then my name started getting out to various companies. And then one of them would mistype the name. So Sivaldi would be spelled wrong. I'd have the wrong middle initial or something like that. And I'd start getting mail from other companies, and then other companies, and then other companies. And it would, I could tell somewhat who had passed it on to whom. So my company name is Sivaldi Cybernetics. Right? So at one point, somehow, the name and organization fields got messed up. So I started getting messages, you know, Dear Ms. Sivaldi Cybernetics, which eventually got truncated to Ms. C. Cybernetics. In fact, it's just amazing for them to send the bills to the cybernetics woman. Yeah, I'd be all set. No such luck. But somehow, when they send me the bills, they always send that to the right place. Except, of course, how many people have registered their own domain name? Got it. Okay. So, whatever. Okay. I won't ask what it is, just for incriminating purposes. Okay. But I have Sivaldi.com, right? So every company has sent some money to Network Solutions and have them renew that. All right. A couple years ago, I got a letter from Network Solutions that says, let's see, your domain name, Nightdale Times, is about to expire, so please send us more money. That's kind of funny. I don't own the domain name, Nightdale Times. So I went back to him and said, I don't own the domain name, Nightdale Times. So the next month, another letter came, again, form letter saying, it's getting real close to the expiration date, you better renew nightdaletimes.com. So I thought, all right, I'll go and see, you know, what this is. So I went to nightdaletimes.com, and it's a newspaper. Now, this is not a talk on website design. But you would think, if you went to the website of a newspaper, maybe you could actually find out how to contact that newspaper. They neglected to put that. They mentioned that they have offices in a particular city. They neglected to mention the state. And these were like generic things like Springfield or something. Great. Right. So, I actually eventually did find it out where they were from and sent them a letter, right, and heard no more about it until a year later when I got another letter from Network Solutions saying, NightdaleTimes.com is about to expire. You should renew it. Now, I could say, well, the hell with the Nightdale Times people. They're bothering me. I'm going to let the damn thing expire. You know, it'll serve them right. But it's not really their fault. It's like the solution's messed up somehow. What really is messed up is if you write them a letter saying, this is the wrong address, what they're supposed to do is fix it, not just keep sending you the letters. What's this have to do with internet piracy? Well, it's just an illustration about once the information is in the computer, everybody just assumes it's right. And it just has sort of a juggernaut effect. They just automatically send you the letter every month saying, you need to renew. And it doesn't matter if you call them or write them. So it came again this summer. And this time I called them, and I told them one more time. And I only got one additional copy of it after that. But I said, as long as I'm actually on the phone, could you please make sure that Sivaldi.com has the right address so you don't go sending it off to North Carolina or whatever, and they confirm. So at least I know it's not going to expire inadvertently. Okay. You know, so is it accurate? Is the information up to date? You know, I've had people call me and say, you know, are you still with the University of Rochester? Nobody's yet asked, are you still working for Taylor Instrument, which not only did I leave in 1981, but was then acquired in the name that doesn't even exist anymore. But, you know, I get information about outdated stuff all the time. I keep getting letters forwarded to me, to my mother, back in Rochester. And I moved away 10 years ago. So now, some of them apparently got the forwarding notice, so now I'm getting the address to my mother at my house in Acton. But just to show you, this, not companies doing this, right? My parents, I bought the house that my parents had built, right? So that I grew up in, and then they retired and moved to Florida. I stayed there and I bought the house from them, right? About 2 years after I left, a letter came addressed to my mother calling her to jury duty. So I called up the courthouse and I said, she's not a citizen of this county anymore. She's not eligible to come to jury duty. Now, where did they get that? They get it from things like the voter registration rolls. Except, of course, she moved. But, you know, when you move, there's no form that you fill out that says, please take me off the voter registration roll. So they just kept sending it, right? So then I talked to that. So, you know, so the county said, okay, sorry, you'll take her off the juror roll. Right? So then a year later, she got called to town court for the jury, and I had to tell them to. In the meantime, she'd already took her jury down for them. Okay. Can you find out what that information is? You know, can, if say, a company or the credit bureau or the government, right, can you contact them and say, can I have a copy of my file so I can, like, check if everything is correct? Can you do that? Usually not. But can you find out who is accessing it? You know, can you say, I wonder if anybody contacted my old company to find out whether I used to work there or not? Can you correct it or can you comment on it? You know, can you go into your credit history and say, I really did pay that bill, right? And I finally got the company to admit it, but it still shows here that I defaulted on that loan, or whatever, right? Or, you know, whatever. And is it even about you? You know, many times information gets done with other people with similar names or people who used to live in their address, things like that. And it gets worse, or better, depending on your point of view, when it's electronic. One thing is, it's a lot easier to find the data. You can, you know, if you know the social security number or, you know, the name. Yeah. I mean, how many of you ever go to, like, Verizon.com and you look for, say, gee, I have a friend and he lives somewhere in the Worcester area, but I don't remember what town, but I remember his last name. You know, if I don't know, there's three people with that last name, so you just call them all and then, you know, you find your friend. And if you don't, didn't used to be able to do that before it was on the computer. You know, back when it was called 411, you know, you say, can you give me the names of all the, you know, J. Wilsons in the in Worcester. And they say, no. Thanks a lot. So it makes it easier. But it's also easier to correlate. If you have information from multiple databases, you know, the same database, but, you know, from multiple databases, you can look for connections between that. You know, when we like what they're doing, we call it data mining. And when we don't like it, we call it snooping, or unwarranted invasion of privacy, but it's the same technology. So for example, you know, if you want to find out all Quakers of Lithuanian descent who read books on fireworks, because, you know, like, maybe they'll decide to abandon their pacifist principles and start blowing things up, you could presumably do this, right? Because you know from census data, right, or from perhaps organization data, or from mining newspaper reports or things like that, you can tell a person's ethnic heritage and a person's religion, right? And then you check the library records and say, we checked out the books on fireworks. I picked this not because I wanted to either pick on Lithuanians or Quakers. I wanted to pick one where it probably was pretty unlikely that this person would be a terrorist. So, okay. So, what bad can happen? Right? Suppose your privacy is invaded in this way. You know, this information gets into the wrong hands. What could happen? Well, in extreme case, the government could have to maybe kill you or throw you in jail. I don't know, maybe not too likely in the U.S., but certainly in a lot of countries it's much more common. And there certainly have been times in the U.S. when this sort of stuff has happened, on both the national and the local level. So, you know, you might not want that. Might have criminals who say, oh, look, we found out, you know, how much money you make. And we found out that you bought, you know, a new BMW. Sounds like a good place to go and steal something, right? Or kidnap you or something like that. You know, in the old days, up to the 30s, say, right, the society columns for the newspapers would say things like, oh, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Vanderbilt are leaving their lovely mansion to go spend the summer in Europe. And the people say, how convenient, there'll be nobody home. Hey, how about targeted by protesters? You know, suppose somebody can't stand Pugwash. Well, all right, maybe that's a little bit far-fetched, but certainly could happen. Or how about if you're a member of, National Abortion Rights Action League, right, or the National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws, right, or the NRA, or the Republican Party. Well, that's probably a big organizational list, but the point is, so it doesn't matter what organization you're in, there's probably somebody who's mad about the fact that you are in that organization. So, how about if they can find out where you live, where you work, where your children go to school? Well, it's not you yet, but, you know, a few more years. Right. Do you want them finding, that out? How about you go to apply for a home mortgage?
Right.
Oh, no, gee, sorry. You can't, you don't qualify, don't get loan, right? But it's actually because of, say, who you work for, or what organization you're in, things like that, right? Don't get a job because of your ethnic heritage, something like that. Don't get insurance because you have some medical problem, right? Suppose you've got, your parents were both carriers of a particular gene, right? And if a particular combination comes in, you now have a greater chance of developing breast cancer or something 10 years down the line. So the insurance company says, you're at poor risk. You're healthy now, but we got to play the odds. Too bad. Want that out? Or the deluge by junk mail? Maybe that's the worst of all. At least you know they're paying, 37 cents or whatever for each copy. Of course, the bulk mail is a lot cheaper than that. Because it's a non-profit, it's even cheaper than that. I just pub watch the non-profit organization. They get the bulk mailing discount. How convenient. You can junk mail to people and ask the price. So you just, send it electronically. Actually, when I do that, I have somebody sent me a very handy email the other day, and sent them $100, I'll send you 200 million email addresses. Basically, just let me all forward these messages. I get them by the gross, those are messages, so I can spare them. On the other hand, I don't want to give you all gloom and doom. The fact that this information exists and is in electronic form actually can have benefits. And usually this is why people go to the trouble of doing it. The number of people who do this just to be mean is probably much smaller than the people who do it because they think there's some sort of benefit to doing it. Right? A recent survey showed something like 25% of resumes had just outright lies on them as to where people worked and what their job responsibilities were. Right? Here in Massachusetts, I hope the name John Gagan rings a bell. Would you like to know that your priest or your doctor or your teacher, happens to be a child molester? Would you like to know that? Right. Somebody's on the run from the authorities. You hope for a good cause, like that he murdered somebody, or is a victim, or is it an escape convict or something. Would it be nice to be able to track that person down through the use of computer technology? Track down people who have been kidnapped. You got the Amber Alert system. Technology lets that sort of information be sent out all over the country in a matter of a few minutes. Right. Medical history, you're found unconscious by the side of the road. Did you pass out because you're drunk? Or did you have a seizure of some kind? Do you have a heart condition? Something like that. Right. If they can find your information. Right. They find, you're lying there. They say, looks like an infection. Let's give that person some penicillin. They say, sorry. Sorry, we didn't realize that you were allergic to it. Have a peanut, it'll make you feel better. Or, even such a mundane thing is, you go to the pharmacist, and you visit with a specialist, doctor who's a specialist, right, and she gives you a prescription for some drug, and you go to the pharmacy, and the pharmacist looks at his computer, and he says, hey, you're taking another drug that would interfere with it. It would block its effectiveness or perhaps have hazardous side effects. And you didn't tell the doctor about that. Okay. Sounds like it would be handy to have. Or how about, you know, you call from your cell phone, the new cell phones will have GPSs in it, low positioning system. Well, hey, that could be good. Of course, if you're like making a scene phone call or something, you might not want them to be able to tap your GPS and call it. Hey, yeah, because I didn't mention caller ID. Is that a blessing or a curse? You know, is caller ID good because you can know if somebody's calling to harass you? Or is it good so that if you don't want to talk with somebody, you don't have to? Right? So, you know, you're calling up Microsoft all the time to complain about Bill Gates. They just look at the caller ID and say, we're not going to answer that one. Okay. We're almost at the end. Now, I warned you, this is a huge topic. I'm only trying to give you some ideas on this. Okay, what is safe? In the government, in the federal government, this is one of the things actually that the USA Patriot Act is striking down. There have traditionally been limits on sharing of information between the FBI, CIA, and so on. And also, a lot of local law enforcement organizations, even if they wanted to share information, aren't able to because their systems are incompatible and so on. Well, if you share it, and now you catch some terrible criminals or you prevent some terrorist act, you say, wow, how great. Right? And if you use it to arrest people, you say, how bad. You know, you go back and you look at some of what they call the dirty tricks that the Nixon administration pulled, you know, as far as using the power of government to act against their political enemies. And you know, there's some people just will stop at almost nothing to do what either they think is right or to do what they think would be to their own advantage. Look at a thing like the census. I'll give you a story about that. A couple of years ago, I was at the Cornell Library, and the librarian was demonstrating their census data that they got from the federal government. And she said, now, look at this. And yeah, obviously, she had done this before, so she knew to do the demonstration. So she said, look at this. I'm going to go into the city of Ithaca, and I find that the average salary for Hispanic people is so many dollars, and the average salary for, you know, Japanese people is so many dollars, and whatever. Right. She said, now, let's go to the town where I live. And she happened to be of Asian ancestry. Right? She said, let's go to the town where I live, and there was no average statistic for Asian. She says, I'm the only one in my small town. The software suppresses that when the statistics are generated, because there's a rule in the Census Bureau, they can't release statistics that can actually be individualized to one person or one family. Okay? So it detects it, doesn't generate it. Now, the raw data is there, but they have a policy that prevents it from coming out, and through technology, they prevent the information from being produced. Pretty handy. Standard stuff, you know, not just electronic, but, you know, these search warrants and subpoenas for the government to get data. You know, it could also apply things like wiretaps, but of course under the USA Patriot Act, it's a lot easier to get that sort of thing. They could also do things like sneaking in and putting software onto your computer that captures your keystrokes, stuff like that. You know, companies have privacy policies, and I hope that they follow them. Under federal law, if you're ever denied credit because of a credit report, do you have the right to contact the credit bureau that gave you the bad report, examine your credit file, and then correct or comment on any of the information that they had asked about 20 years or more. Mm-hmm. And finally, we're on the home stretch. Here's a few things that you can do. If you sign up with any company on the web, find out what their privacy policy is. But just says, you know, click here for privacy policy, and almost nobody ever reads those. Well, read them. Yeah. Does it say, we'll do whatever the heck we want with your data? Or say, no, we're going to keep it inside the company or whatever? Right? As the webmaster for the local chapter of the ACM, we spent a lot of time coming up with our privacy policy. Basically, we didn't want to actually send it out to anybody else. We didn't want to give information to anybody else. We wanted to reassure our members that this app would be kept private. So we went to a lot of trouble to do it in reassuring and unambiguous tone. You know, keep the information you submit minimal if you can. You know, if you don't have to submit your phone number, you don't have to submit anything, then don't do it. You might want to have separate email accounts. You maybe have your main account here or some other place, but go on to Hotmail or something, create some accounts there that you can use for people to notify you about things, that your main account doesn't get filled up with spam. Use, if you're going to send sensitive things by mail, you can use encryption, things like that. Certainly, whenever you're using a website where you have to give your credit card number or something like that, they should be using SSL, secure socket layer. And in the corner of the browser, you know, you'll see the little heading on whether it's an Explorer or Netscape will be in one or the other corner. And there's a little locking key or something, depending. And it'll tell you this is a secure connection. So it's encrypting the information that's being sent. But that doesn't prevent somebody from breaking into, say, Amazon.com and stealing your credit card. But, you know, they can't get eavesdropped. One of the things we do actually at ACM is, since we have to get your credit card number in order to, for example, renew your membership, right? We do that, and then for our records, we keep the last four digits. We throw away the other 12 digits. If the transaction is open, we throw it away. Okay? We figure, well, for four digits, you know, we'd have to guess 12 more digits, so it's probably unlikely that somebody could get your credit card that way. But we have had things where people would call up and say, I'm checking my bill, and I'm not sure which credit card I use to renew my membership with. He said, well, it's the one that ends in these four digits. So that was in that case, a deliberate choice in the database to only store that information. Right? If you now know anybody logging into the text, you just got to use SSH, so you have to put some stuff there. Right? You can use the WPIVPN from at home, and that encrypts everything going from even web pages and so on, between your house and campus. And then finally, through organizations such as PugWalk, you can stimulate public debate. Remember I said there's always trade-offs. So you have to ask yourself, what are you willing to give up to get the good things? What safeguards do you want to insist are put in? As long as the information exists, there's always the chance that somebody can misuse it. But can safeguards be added? And there certainly are things that can be done. Of course, it's not what you just have to be security. There's also things we talk about there. Okay, this is my last slide. Yes, I think this is my last slide. So just some questions. What information do you think that the government should legitimately have about people, whether it be its own citizens or other people? What information should the companies have? What information should the schools have? Do you want your school to know what non-campus organizations you're in, for example? Maybe you don't care. Maybe it's really important to you. Maybe you're afraid that, if your teacher, of course, publish is on campus. What's some organization be that sometimes gets targeted? I don't know. All right. Suppose, you're secretly a member of the NRA. You don't want your friends on campus. You want your publish friends to know that you're in the NRA, and then they find out, right? So let me just say, there's one last thing, which is the harder question. What freedoms are you willing to give up? Maybe not. In which case, you may have to kill yourself. You probably do not live in the real physical world, right? And if you live in Miragia, I'd say, maybe you can. But when you're in the real world, right, you cannot have unlimited freedom. Right. So they usually say, what freedom do you give up to have security? That's the classic question, right? But sometimes you have to give up freedom to preserve other freedoms. Or maybe not. One of the things we voluntarily do in an organization such as PugWash is we say, I know I have the right to drown out everybody else in the room by shouting really loud so that they don't get a chance to say what they want. But you voluntarily don't exercise that right because you have respect for the other people. Right? You may say, I disagree with you, but at least you have the right to talk, and I'm not going to interfere with that. But I'm going to ask that you reciprocate and give that same thing back to me. Society is supposed to work that same way. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But part of being a civilized society is understanding that you have to respect other people, and that sometimes means you can't do the things that you want. is supposed to be worth it in the long run. The really hard discussion is who gets to decide these things. The people decide them individually, the society decides them, religious leaders decide them, the government decides them. That's what you have to confront.
Okay. Thank you.
I thought it lasted a little longer than I originally thought. So well.
Fine.
Yeah. Questions? Discussion? Like that? Everybody looks so shocked.
One thing that I found pretty interesting is that certainly there's the issue of information privacy, but what you're bringing up about companies getting things wrong.
Mm.
What about misinformation? Everybody's asking for Mr. Nikolai Floyd. And all of a sudden they're going, who the hell is this person that's running for
office? So how did the band is just fantastic. That's really what I think. Oh, by the way, which one's pink? Okay. Who got the reference? Yeah, it's from?
It's on
Wish You Were Here. Yeah, that's from Pink Floyd. Supposedly that's what somebody actually said when he met the band. I would like to say that. By the way, which one's pink? Mm-hmm. Okay. Actually, there's a musician named Pink now, isn't there? Yeah, I forgot about that. Well, this was Pink Floyd. Okay. Why don't people think, who cares about this privacy stuff? Or are you like really scared or what? The guy is going to come after you?
I'm kind of curious, like, do they actually have a right to go and look at all the information about how you're using Kazaa or whatever other stuff?
Who's they?
The record industry.
Yeah, well, I would say in general they can't just sort of show up and start looking for it, but if they can get a court order, the answer is absolutely. But unless you can get the subpoena quiet. Yeah. Not a legal expert, but if they show up with the subpoena, right, and, you contact your lawyer and you say, hey, we're paying you big bucks, go back to the court and ask them to do what's called quashing the subpoena, which basically means getting the judge to say, okay, no, we're not going to do it after all, then okay. But if they don't, legally you don't have a leg to stand on. You can't say, oh, no, it's a matter of conscience, I'm not going to turn over that information, because if you say that, they just come and take it anyway. So, yeah. Now, which brings up another point. Suppose, for example, you're designing a library system, right? Or Gordon Library or whatever. Right? And you say, well, when somebody borrows a book, we have to remember who borrowed that book so we can, for example, track that person down if the book doesn't come back. So, but once the book comes back, do you want to remember that for the future, or do you want to purge it? Or do you want to purge it after a year or something like that? It's a policy decision. As far as the program is concerned, you could write it any of those ways. What do you think?
Why would you keep the information?
Okay. Why would you want to keep it after the books come back?
You want to keep a record of how often they go out, but it's not necessary to keep a record of who takes what, because it's not relevant to the librarian. It's all they care is what books are going out and how often they're being taken out. And I know that the librarian who works at the Worcester Public Library has just recently started deleting all their records of what people have been taking out.
But under the U.S. Patriot Act, aren't public librarians required to hand over that information and ask for it?
Yeah.
But what if that information doesn't exist?
Ah, well, if it doesn't exist, you can't get it. You can't do it.
Are they permitted to delete that information? Like, the woman at the Worcester Public Library, is she permitted to purge that information?
I don't think they closed that loophole. Because if you get that, once the information has been subpoenaed, you can't destroy it.
Right.
But if nobody's asked for it yet, it's still your information. I can tell you a story. Years ago, I worked for, a lot of companies, but I worked for Taylor Instruments. Kodak had just been involved in a big lawsuit, and they lost the lawsuit because people went back and were able to dig up old memos and so on from like 10 years earlier. Right. So Kodak with Taylor Collins too, they set up what they call the record retention policy, which would actually be record destruction policy, which meant you were supposed to periodically go through your files and anything older than 2 years, unless it was really needed for running the company, it was destroyed. The idea being, if there ever was a speed or something, then you could just say, oh, sorry, that, we don't have that information in writing, we'll have to just rely on our memories. And if that's what I remember, no, we never made that comment to that person, or whatever. No, we never discussed having antitrust actions or anything. Oh, no, no, nothing like that. I'm not making this up.
Well, I am aside with the ACM meeting, network operations gave a presentation, and they can monitor all network traffic and data, and the way things are set up here, they can very easily be identified to a user account. And this, they don't regularly use this data or access it unless they have to, but if they're subpoenaed, they could tell you what music you downloaded from who, when, and what band it or the song itself even. So it's extremely easy to actually do this data mining for something.
Of course, partly you have to set up to that. I mean, you know, we've got a connection, WI connection to the commodity internet is like 45 megabits per second now, or is it gone?
I think it's 45.
Okay. And then we've got 155, I think, going to internet too? Mm-hmm. Okay. Unless they're doing something that I don't know about, not that they have to tell me, right? They're not like recording every single byte at 45 megabits per second coming through there. It's not practical to do. But if they knew that a particular person was suspected or something, then they could trap just that person's data, that sort of thing, or particular types of data and so on. But it's not practical to keep every single thing because the speeds are just too high. Maybe someday. On the other hand, the total information awareness, which actually was just officially killed last week, so September 25th. That was this government program. They're going to basically have huge databases that drew upon credit card information, other company information, also to government information on local and state level and federal level, and do data mining on it. And they were talking about multiple petabytes. I mean, a peta is how many? 10 to the what?
Wasn't
it 1,024 tera? Yeah. So it's 10 to 15? 10 to 15? Yeah. That's a lot of data. One petabyte could hold the entire Library of Congress 50 times over. That's a lot of data. Right? But they were, you know, working into it. They were asking computer scientists to submit proposals for how could we search this. What technologies could be used to store it? You know, yes, companies, I suppose, probably people like IBM and EMC and so on. You know, could you build disk drives that could store this amount of information and get to it quickly? And, well, Congress cut down the funding for that, so they're not going to do it. But, that could be real scary. On the other hand, you know, if you say, well, it's going to be used to oppress people, or it's going to be used to, like, make us safer by finding terrorists. I don't know. You know, when you have guy like Adolf Hitler, he says, oh, yeah, we got to get rid of all these undesirable people because they're a threat to our country. You know, so we'll ship them off to the concentration camps and we'll kill them. Right. You know, and the rest of us say, gee, he wasn't justified in doing that. But, you know, there are probably people who believed him at the time. He got away with it for a long time. He had security, you know, nobody inside Germany was, you know, telling him no. So from this point of view, he had greater security. The rest of the people. Well, the people who agreed with him did. It was the other people who didn't. It feels weird to be sitting at the end here.
This is just somewhat of a topic, but another major privacy violation is companies who have customer service people who have no idea what the privacy policy is.
Mm.
For instance, I doubt another company would do this because of how legal it is, but find out where someone lives, mm-hmm. or just find out their name. Find a major utilities company in the town, say, yes, I want so-and-so, I want to verify what my telephone number is, what address the bill's being sent to, get that information, call them back a few days later, get more information eventually through what we have to Social Security number.
Wow. Why, actually, this in class, but I had a thing a few years ago. I got a call from my credit card company, and they said, did you just buy $3,000 worth of auto parts up in Lawrence? I said, no, I've never been to Lawrence. Said, well, somebody with your credit card did. Their computer had spotted it. Unfortunately, it spotted it after the transaction, but they spotted it, so they called me the next day. And I said, well, let me check. And I looked in my wallet, and I got the card in my hand. And he said, well, according to our records, the person had the card. So I said, when does the card expire? And I realized the card was going to expire at the end of the month. Apparently somebody stole the new card out of the mail before it got there. So, now, how that happened, I don't know, since I have a locked mailbox. So somewhere between when it left the company or was about to leave the bank, you know, to the time when it got to my letter carrier, someone grabbed it and used it. The company didn't charge me the $3,000. You know, they had me fill out a form, and I don't know idea if they ever caught the people who did that. In that case, I'm glad that their computer caught that. Who knows what else might have happened with that. You know, they issued me a new card with a new number. But the same technology could be used for evil, too.
Kind of a similar thing. Several years ago, actually, somebody had sold a through the internet and credit card number. And we found this out because the brilliant mind behind this had ordered a nice big Canon printer, and it was shipped to our house, and we're like, what the hell is this thing on our doorstep? And how do you think they got the person? But either way, the credit card company was actually kind of amused at that. I guess it's not something that happens often.
Unix account name, a couple other things.
I think it opens up with a lot of information.
Like, it doesn't tell you the
place. It's still available now, whether you're, like, on campus or off campus at once.
Yeah, it doesn't put your address or...
It does pull up pictures of professors, though.
At least some professors.
It must be.
Yeah.
We go to ratemyprofessors.com and see if you got the chili pepper or not.
The April Fool's webpage?
Yeah. But I wanted to find out, you know, how I wasn't being rated on there, but I was never able to find myself. You couldn't just do a search. You had to have clicked through randomly. So.
I wonder if spammers ever actually get money from that. I mean, clearly they do, but it's like, is there somebody who gets a, like, 30, the same email that says, you know, get a new loan and their home mortgage, and I don't even have a home, so how can I get a loan on it? But, you know, is there somebody who's, this looking for this? This is the answer to my career.
Yeah, somebody goes crazy now. It's profitable, only like 4,000 out of 50,000 people.
Yeah, I might. There's some like percentage. So if they, the more they send, like they're guaranteed someone. I mean, I don't know anyone that's ever bought anything from any of those, but there's some non-zero return percentage for spam, and I guess that's just what keeps them going. How expensive is this?
Very cheap.
You
folks somebody long enough to see how long it takes to really get
something.
I know in New Zealand there was somebody who was found to be sending spam, and their home address, phone number, and name was printed in one of the newspapers in New Zealand.
Ah, there you go.
And,
and his email address too?
Not his email address, but phone number and home. And home address. So he got a lot of spam, like snail mail spam. Okay. And people started calling him and harassing him and being like, stop sending me spam. And so he complained to the newspaper for printing his information.
Well,
and so they printed an apology, but I mean, the information's already out there.
We're sorry, we printed your address, which is listed below.
What up, dude? Well, remember, you know, somebody said, well, I don't know anybody who actually ordered, like, Viagra from one of these websites, but, you know, they promise it's confidential.
Yeah.
You never even meet the doctor. Yeah, there you go.
I guess that's a new one. Yeah. You know, for telephone spam, you know, that's one thing that my uncle is a nice technique for taking care of those people. Hello, Mr. Lowell. Would you like Lowell to say, oh, yes, I would just love to hear, you know, hear you talk about it. Just hold on for a moment. Put the phone down. It goes on for a couple hours. Comes back, they're still on. Goes, oh, good, you're still here. Good. All right, now, if you just hold on a minute, I'll be right back. Well, on. Walk the dog. Goes to work the next day. They actually... He says it works pretty well.
He'll probably just let her know that.
I actually do occasionally get people asking me, you know, they'll forward something and say, do you think this is on the level? You know, it's a chain letter or it's a guy in Nigeria who wants some money. So there actually are people who, in this case, thought that maybe it wasn't okay, which implied that there are people who got it and thought that it was okay. I mean, there was somebody just a couple of months ago in the paper, and he had gotten like $50,000 out of people with one of these email chain things. He finally got you know, some of the people who hadn't gotten any before. So,
the recent thing, the do not call list.
Yes.
Right, that keeps going back and forth, whether it's actually unconstitutional, so you're then telling mockers, threatening their freedom of speech. Now, that's what a judge said, that he deemed it unconstitutional, but Bush, despite the checks and balances we supposedly have in this country, told it to go into effect yesterday anyways, despite what that judge said.
So now do we say, good for you, President Bush, you've saved the American public from these evil telemarketers.
That was overruled by a higher court.
Was he overruled again?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
yeah, it's 7:15, so he hasn't been. No, seriously, yeah, I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, and I said, no, it's off. And he says, no, it's the morning news, it's back on as of today. Huh? So.
There's an idea floating around making that would make local law enforcement officers, police officers, that would permit them to practice immigration law. To give them the capabilities of federal agents.
What capabilities would those be?
So that if they find illegal immigrants, they can take them to the border. Right now, local law enforcement officers are not allowed to tell in matters dealing with immigration. So even if, for instance, you're a police officer and you're at the scene of a crime and one of the witnesses happens to be an illegal immigrant, it's no business of yours. To you, they're a witness to a crime, and the crime is what you're dealing with. Whether or not they're in the country legally is not your affair. Under this new, I don't even know what it's going through, but it would be your affair. So actually, a lot of law enforcement officers are against it simply because it would increase their workload, which is already fairly heavy in most parts of the country, and also because in situations like this, you would have witnesses not coming to them.
Well, on the other hand, has there been noticed sort of inconsistency that up in California, not only do, say, the children of illegal immigrants get to go to the public schools, but now the legal immigrants can get California driver's license.
Yeah, what's with that?
And
my father keeps saying California.
Of course, I could say, well, gee, my ancestors had to wait in line at Ellis Island for a chance to come to, you know, to become legal immigrants. So,
it's one of the reasons Mexico wouldn't support the war in Iraq, because it wants to settle the affair, because there are hundreds of thousands of Mexican leaders living illegally in the United States. They basically wanted to settle that, and it's just something that's unhappy. So Mexico held off on supporting the war in Iraq until that was settled. I'm not sure.
I mean, do they want their citizens?
They want California, New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas back.
Sure. Yeah. I don't have
the
control
of the Texas. Hey. The Russian space center is in Kazakhstan now.
Yeah,
it's the sublet. Shall I steal quietly off into the night? Or? Yes.
What happened with the FBI's counter-bush system? It was in the news a while back, and they just kind of faded out all of a sudden.
Because
there's been
operations around.
Ah, okay.
I know it's been on there a few counterbore is basically an electronic warrant. If I remember it all correctly, the FBI can go to your internet service provider and be able to track your data without your knowledge over the warrant, of course.
Not exactly.
No? Okay.
It's hardware software combination, I think. I believe the FBI has some stuff hardware beforehand, and then if they see any probable cause or something happens regularly, of course, they can pull any of the ISP's records on you and anything their own software causes.
They like start data mining without a warrant.
Mm-hmm. Well, then they say, okay, we know this has been collecting this ISP, because they go to the ISP, they like take a PC or print a machine, somehow they put it at the ISP, it's like under block and key, they can get to it, and then they say, oh yeah, it's probably been collecting this information, but we can't get to it without a, you know, warrant, at which point then it's their machine.
Yeah.
And they only want to do it.
I feel
sick.
Did they speak about that at the MIT one? At the MIT conference? Not the MIT, the Harvard conference.
What happened?
Yeah. I remember
some of the
stuff
around. Yeah.
No one's stuff at the national conference.
At the national conference.
Or the information awareness is on the radar.
Yeah.
It's taking information about you that you don't have. Really, like in the, it's, you know, like credit reports and everything.
You have to
really, you know, work hard to get at your own office. But everybody else has not
watched.
Sorry,
finally, that information. It's my file in your company.
Yeah, that's fine. This information I take with you.
Well, hey, if you're a credit bureau, right, then you say, well, for $39 a year, you have the right to look at your credit report anytime you want. They can make some money out of it.
Didn't charge like stores and stuff to have access to credit reports?
Actually, my mother used to work for the credit bureau in Rochester, so I know all the dirt about that.
Oh. Yeah, like can you go to the store and like write a check or a paper check and actually scan it, and a lot of places, or some places, I know one place where I paid to actually scan the check and it goes out electronically. And they won't accept the check unless their check insurer says that the check is okay. So who knows how they, you know, run to your account number or whatever, and then they can take it.
I've tried to apply to Amazon.com so I could sell a whole bunch of, you know, my old textbooks online, but for some reason, like, they said, you know, it worked for like 3 hours. Nope, I'm sorry, whatever our process is to, you know, prove people and disprove people, they had no indication out of, you know, their scrutiny. It was just what the information I gave them was where to put the money that, you know, I earned from a book sale, you know, where to put that, you know, just checking it out so they can put money into it, not take anything out of it. And they go, no, I'm sorry, you're fine. Why? Nope, we can't share that information with you. But we would like you to, you know, be rest assured that, you know, your data went through serious scrutiny for about 10 minutes. So, serious scrutiny, and that has nothing to do with your financial background at all. I sent them about three emails, and they said the exact same thing. It was only three different people saying the exact same thing.
You have a form letter that you read and pick up. This is your response number 12.
Yeah.
This is for response number. it's just ridiculous where you can't even get your own information, but everybody's got, you know, every other company, agency, or some guy who has not been found out by the town in New Zealand and is a big fan can go, I summon the information of this individual. There it is. Everything.
Oh, yeah, that's good credit card stuff. If you get one, anyone for $30, I think it's most recently is that it can get your contact information, regardless of whether or not you pay to have it listed or anything like that. It's all in credit headers, which are typically demographic, which means it's public access. Use
contact. Demographic if it has your contact information.
I don't know, that could be demographics. If they can't see it, like a fully credit header,
it's correct.
It's completely available to the public for free. So if you get a credit card, they won't find you at this point.
So information is power. Power corrupts. Absolutely power.
patent law. They exist. A lot of, you know, I remember people used to say, oh, if you have, you know, a lot of money, then you can buy anything. If you don't have a lot of money, you can buy a lot.
Okay,
right,
I just want to thank Professor Strong for coming to give us a little second part of the session.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody? Do I open it now? Okay. Let me have my glasses back on again. We're still recording this. It's a thank you. We appreciate all the time and effort you put into the presentation. Now, if you actually knew how long this took, you might not say that. No, seriously, this is I do appreciate that. And I actually appreciate having the opportunity to come here and rant at you. And to I've addressed a lot of different organizations over the years, and a lot of times it's like unsophisticated users, like people who want to buy computers and stuff like that. So I give a talk at a computer show or something like that. And it's always good to have, you know, a group of people who actually not only care about what I'm talking about, but have ideas and opinions of their own. So I hope that this can continue. I wish I could say that I'll just come to the Pugwash meeting every week, but if you have to look at my calendar, you would know why I can't. So I'll see if I can come again. Does it say Ed Life? No, it doesn't. Thank you. Thank you. I have a place of honor on my desk. What? Okay, I got my computer packed up so I can turn this off.